Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne. With me, as always, is Thomas Brooks.
Oh, hi.
Sarah Tracy.
Hello.
So we're here to finish our discussions on forensic psych and serial killers. We've talked a little bit about the Dark Triad. We've talked about some less than great people who got caught and locked away. And we're going to kind of finish our discussion on kind of the nature and nurture aspects of, I guess, the antecedents. Maybe that's a good word.
Mm-hmm.
Of serial killers, or of maybe not mass murderers, but serial killers. The childhood experiences, biological, the research on biological evidence and whatnot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, indeed. I can dive in a little bit. I mean, I think we all want to know why. We want to know what led to this person to do what they did. I think especially when other people who have also endured pretty horrible upbringings, abuse, trauma, etc., they end up not doing things like this. Mm-hmm. You know, we know serial killers are extremely rare. So that does lead us to sort of think about, well, then what happened with these people, right? What is going on? I can't say that there's necessarily one thing. I will say that certainly there are some things that occur, you know, a lot of trauma, abuse, et cetera, that some people can power through. That's maybe not the best way to say it, but for some people, they can't, it destroys them. And then they are so angry. And you know, we know that with some of these serial killers or with some, murderers, et cetera, they don't perceivably have a horrible upbringing. Though I will say that a lot of times we do find out more information. But one of it, obviously one of the big things is trauma, right? Abuse. There's an example that not maybe quite as much the case now, but back in the day, it used to be that a lot of families were extremely religious, very, very dogmatic. And some of that sort of spilled over into, I don't want to say gender roles, but just thinking that like sex was dirty and women were dirty. And that was awful. So, you know, well, Ed Kemper is one of those that I think of. And then Ed Gein is pretty classic. But if you're raised in an environment where you're not allowed to have really interaction with whoever you're interested in, then that becomes a huge limitation and a lot of anxiety around that. But yeah, a lot of abuse, neglect, which is a form of abuse, the mother hate, things like that. And then, you know, with head trauma, certainly it depends on where, but if you think about that, that's going to affect somebody's brain, their brain development, especially in childhood, which parts of the brain are now swelling or inflamed, which parts of the brain maybe are not able to form or develop appropriately. So if we look at I won't go into all these cases for sure, but Earl Nelson is one you can look up. And he collided with a trolley car on his bike when he was growing up. It never really was the same. I believe he lived in San Francisco, right? And like they only have trolley cars so many places, and that is one. But literally collided with it. And the fact that he made it is kind of a miracle. Arthur Shawcross had at least four head injuries. John Gacy developed a blood clot in his brain after being hit by a swing. So these are all things that are going to affect your brain development, again, especially as a child. Another aspect of this, of the potential why is the what they call the warrior gene or the MAOA gene mutation. It's really an enzyme that affects the gene expression or lack thereof. So it's called the monoamine oxidase A, MAOA. And the genotype variation has been associated with aggression, especially with children. And there was research that was done with rats. I'll be honest, I can't point to the specific article. I can't reference it, but basically they had rats and they removed some of the MAOA enzyme. And the rats became immediately much more aggressive. So lower levels of the MAOA lead to higher levels of aggressive behavior. Right? It's that inverse relationship. You'd almost think, well, maybe wouldn't it be that more of something? But no. It's that they don't have enough regulation of their emotions, of their behaviors. And so that really leads to some of these psychopathic tendencies. And then yeah, so male carriers of the low expressing variant of MAOA with childhood trauma and or certainly like other adverse events seem to be more aggressive. And what's interesting with this one is that with female carriers, the higher expressing variant actually leads to more aggression, which there's a lot that we don't know, right?
Interesting.
What
Is
do you
it?
think, Daniel? What are you guys thinking?
Yeah. Go ahead, Thomas.
Oh, I was going to ask, is it called the warrior gene because it's so tethered to aggressive behavior?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah, which again, it's a bit of a misnomer because it's really an enzyme, but I think the word, people kind of get the word gene a little bit better.
You know, this again, like, sounds to me like when we talk about kind of nature nurture influences, general consensus is that it's both. It's both this combination of genetics, physical, in this case, physical trauma, but also the combined with, or some physical, hormonal imbalance or head trauma, combined with the kind of, the nurture aspect. And so we're kind of seeing a lot of the same thing that we would expect to see in kind of other branches of psychology, where we're kind of looking at this combination or this interacting effect of both childhood issues, which I guess we learn more with serial killers and whatnot because we want to understand. So when someone does something horrible, it's kind of maybe in our best interest to figure out why, so we can avoid it happening again. But also, people are fascinated by it, and so we get to hear all these wonderful horror stories. So the more and more you delve into, like, there are plenty of podcasts out there that talk about different serial killers and whatnot, and it's just this common theme of issues with their parents, neglect and trauma, combined with other things sometimes that just sort of lead to, these behaviors due to repressing thoughts or feelings or self-hatred or hatred of others that's kind of developed through a lot of this. It just shows that I guess it's complex.
Could we scratch the social itch just a little bit? And this, I don't know, Sarah, if you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but if I remember that the United States like produces the most serial killers by like a whole bunch in the world. So why us?
So there are a few caveats to that. So yes, if you look at the data, it shows overwhelmingly serial killers are in the US. And you can look at, sociocultural reasons or implications for that. And I think some of it has to do with cultural norms. If we look at the Columbine shooting, there were virtually no school shootings prior to that, with the media, with copycats, et cetera, with I'm going to guess people thinking, oh, if they can do it, then I can go do it. I've been maybe thinking about it. The rate of school shootings increased. And I don't have it in front of me, but I on the board in class, I have literally just said what there's like one or two before in history, and now all of a sudden, more and more and more and more. So I think that there are those cultural implications. I think realistically speaking, there are also different ways that different other countries categorize the term serial killer. It may be maybe more than three times. And also the willingness and availability of this information from other countries. You know, they may not really want to let us know, or may want not want to document. I mean, I'm going to guess there's so much that is not documented. So the numbers could certainly be much higher. But those are all big reasons, just the actual, you know, reporting and like in police databases, and you know, if they have the information in there. Honestly, there's some countries that don't have it at all. You cannot get any information about it. So that's what I know.
I mean, there's definitely like touching upon like the cultural aspect of just being aware of it. I mean, if you're like just talking about like let's say school shooters, or these mass shooters. I remember post Columbine because I was in high school at the time, and everyone was freaking out, the administration wise, and then there was another, and then there'd be another, and then just going through college, there'd be more and more, and you would have professionals on the news saying like, stop talking about these people. Like every time there's a school shooter, you're going through their entire life history, you're reading their manifestos on air, you're airing every grievance, and so
Exactly.
anyone who wants to get their 15 minutes of fame, anyone who wants to be known, anyone who's got that sort of like, I feel wrong. I need to send a message. Goes well. The news, like the 24-hour news system, will share it with the world, and it was just psychologists and clinician after clinician, psychologist after psychologist saying like, stop, like focus on the victims, focus on the terrible thing that happened, but stop giving these people airtime. And well, I mean, we still do. We haven't learned.
No.
I guess even much in the same way as like, again, like the true crime podcast and talking about serial killers is so popular.
It's
Yeah.
almost like a memetics of serial killing. Yeah.
A what?
A memetics, like
What
a
is that?
meme.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Wear jeans and serial killer memes.
Right.
The name of the episode.
It
Oh. Is. There you go. Wear your jeans and serial killing. Yeah, it's true. I mean, and the fact that there's so much media nowadays, and you know, frankly, there are a lot more people than there used to be in the world. So my guess is that in other countries, a lot of stuff doesn't get documented, and then a lot of stuff, you know, then isn't reported. I'm not going to say that I don't think in the US we have a larger percentage, or you know, larger prevalence of serial killers. I think we do. I just think that some of the other countries are a bit underreported.
I mean, but like, is the argument that we're just reporting more of it because it sells? That is that could that be part of? I mean, well, I guess it's a different because like if we look at like school shootings and gun violence like that, we are definitely an outlier when it comes to gun violence. And I mean, we don't have to have a debate over Second Amendment rights or anything, but like the
No.
evidence is clear, especially when you compare us to other countries with similar populations and similar densities and the types of crimes being committed, we're just committing more gun crime
Yes.
because guns are more available.
Yeah.
I will say, so I looked up the stats real quick, and it's from Radford University. It's a serial killer information center project that they've been
Yes,
running.
I have that. Yeah, it
It's
has so much
what is
good
it?
info.
They categorize the serial killer as two or more. across countries. And they give the United States 67% of the total global serial killers that have been documented. But countries like Canada have like 2.2, England has 3.5, Germany has 1.7, stuff like that. So I did have that to throw out there, was that that's how the they're operationally defining as two or more instead of three or more.
So they're and I have this the same thing, that Radford document, and it's super helpful because it goes even by decade. And there was a huge uptick in the 80s, and we talk about that in my class. So yeah, they have where you can look at whether it's two or more. Oh, I was gonna share my screen with y'all. Or three or more, and then it literally goes, that just goes like every single year. Then it also looks at ethnicity as well. Which again, some of this relates to reporting, but obviously we do know that it tends to be men doing this to women, and people tend to kill within their same, racial ethnic group. And so that, that even begs, I don't know a lot about hormones, but it's obviously there are sociocultural issues involved when it comes to, men being the perpetrators overwhelmingly, versus women. So if you look, so over all decades, this is just, yeah, this is only in the US, men 92.5%, white 52.2%, mid to late 20s 27%. If you combine white and male, 46%. And then even if you look at motives, with a lot of them, we know that they tend to be lust killers. But before I digress into that, I wanted to bring up just a little bit in relation to sort of neuropsych. And one of the findings that I think is really important and interesting is the fact that, we know the amygdala is kind of the core of, neural system for processing like fearful and threatening stimuli. And what's interesting is that we know that I don't want to necessarily say it's smaller with every serial killer because there's a lot that we don't know, but we know that with a lot of serial killers, these things don't, things that would scare most of us don't frighten them. It's almost like it just goes straight over their head. And these stimuli are just almost mundane rather than having these natural sort of fear responses. Even like the detection of threat, that's appropriate to a certain situation. It just, their brains don't work the same way that ours do. And that's just one example. But yeah, I wanted to add that before I forgot.
That's what my serial killer professor was saying, that when talking about like the sexual response, she was like, it pretty much mirrors normal sexual response, except normal sexual response is like child's play to them. Like it does not elicit excitement. Like the stimuli from a normal sexual experience is like boring and cardboard and 2D for
Exactly.
them.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
Doesn't fire enough neurons.
It does not.
Going back just a hair, like talking about them as like lust killers, like and then talking about some of those like hyper religious childhood experiences. Do you think, like, we're talking about the United States, that we have a history of sexual repression in law and in mentality? I mean other countries do as well. And we don't tend to see it, but also like maybe they're not reporting it as much. But I can kind of like pose that question to the both of you as a gender and sexuality researcher and a forensic researcher, that is that maybe something that that plays a part in that? Or is this like the amygdala aspect kind of like compounding this? Or that kind of lack of like, lack of a response to different stimuli, compounding the kind of repressed trauma or the repression trauma that some of these serial killers are showing. That like it's kind of that difference between like this person had a traumatic childhood but doesn't have the brain issues, and then this person has the kind of differences that are going on with brain firing but doesn't have the traumatic issues that kind of like link it to sex. And then but if you've got both, it's kind of like a perfect storm.
I'll let Sarah talk to the brain bit, but I will say just like browsing the country and percentage lists here, if that hypothesis were to hold up, I would also expect places like Poland or Brazil under fascism or Russia or perhaps even India to have much higher rates.
But I'm almost wondering too, because when you look at some other countries, like there are, like Canada has issues with, let's say, like Indigenous women going missing repeatedly, very well, maybe from the same people, but they're like, yeah, we're not going to really like look into that all that much. Or you might have these issues in Poland or in India, with revenge killings or again, like sexually related killings. These have
I'm
been
just thinking
reported,
of like the religious
but the religious.
repression to like deviant sexuality, like line here. I would expect all of those countries to be at least higher than like Canada.
There's just something about the United States, though, that we're like
So that's kind of my thing, but also I will
above.
grant to Sarah too that like I don't know if we can report data reported to the United States from like fascist Brazil from like the 80s. So
Right. Well, and again, so much goes unreported. Think about who's marginalized in a lot of these countries, who, a lot of these women who are in countries where they're not, not allowed to leave the house, not allowed to drive, et cetera, things like that. If they go missing, nobody's saying anything. Nobody. So again, I sort of feel like places where the, religion is so central to, which, that's most countries, right? But it just depends on some of the central, maybe even peripheral, tertiary tendencies of the religion, I think would really relate to how some people just feel entitled to do whatever they want and know that they will get away with it. So honestly, that's where I go. I mean, I feel like some of this is probably a lot more prevalent.
We also probably spend the most amount of money on our law enforcement than all of these countries combined, too. So, like, we're probably better at catching them just in general.
True. Right. And hopefully, knock on wood, there's less corruption so that, let's say somebody's maybe in law enforcement or in, whatever system is sort of takes its place, that is not, well, I feel like it might be corrupt, right? And so then let's see how like the mafia will just go there. And like, if you're gonna do something, nobody's gonna know. The mafia will just go take care of it for you. So it's like there's so much that happens that we don't know that does not get documented, and there's no way we're ever gonna know it. Especially when there's such power disparities. So, I don't even know if that answers it, Daniel, but that's.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that came to mind, because you had also mentioned the like crime spike in the 1980s. We see this big spike, and there's some hypotheses as to why that happened. My personal favorite is lead. in the atmosphere. It's that we had leaded gasoline up until like what is like the 40s or 50s or 60s. And so the children being born in there would have been hitting their 20s, like optimal brain development in the 80s. And we see these massive spikes in the 70s, 80s to 90s with like, we're actually still dealing with like our atmosphere has like lethal, like higher than the normal lead quantity, but it's not as bad because we got rid of leaded gasoline. In most places, NASCAR still uses it, and if you live near a NASCAR track, you're more prone to issues with prefrontal cortex functioning. And
Interesting.
but I was trying to see if I could find like other countries in the 80s that like what's what's going on in terms of like these big spikes per so like per 100,000 people, like how many crimes are being reported. And
I can tell you what I know. That I've read, I shouldn't say that I think I know, right? Part of it is DNA. So we didn't have access to DNA testing, DNA evidence, and so when that increased, then man, we could really nail some of these people. Because before that, we didn't have enough, the burden of proof, right? We didn't have enough, but when we have DNA evidence, that really, really increased it. And then also, the definition of serial killer was really kind of solidified in the 80s as well. And so then people had a way to really categorize and say, okay, this person fits in the serial killer category, and this person fits in like the spree murder or mass murder. So I, maybe we had people that we categorized differently, and now we're sticking them in the serial killer box. So those are the two things that I have learned. But certainly, yeah, the blood. Oh, yeah.
One of the things that I picked up on when I was working on the Satanic Panic research stuff was that mandatory reporting came into full effect and was enforced through the 70s and 80s as well. And so now people were reporting stuff that they wouldn't have reported beforehand. And
Oh,
so,
yeah.
because that went into effect at the end of the 60s, and then it really like got solidified and like enforced through the 70s and 80s. So you had people who were now being like legally obligated to report crimes that they might not have beforehand.
And it also includes like all crimes. So like that also includes like the beginnings of like the quote unquote war on drugs. And the kind of mass push by was it Nixon and then post Nixon like of like cracking down on drugs and stuff in the inner cities that we now know the CIA was helping to supply. That's for another episode.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That sounds very interesting.
But yeah, it's kind of fascinating. Like there's this like combination of possible things, but like that's one of the things that I think to think of as well is like the lead always sticks with me just because it's something that does have a demonstrated effect on brain development, and that if we're having this kind of like spike or issue in let's say people who have poor emotional regulation who get a little more aggressive. Because of issues with brain development. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we were still painting houses with lead paint.
Well,
And
and
I
that, oh, go ahead.
was about to say, I just know for a fact I've lived in houses with asbestos too, so.
Right.
That's not good. Yeah, I was gonna say related to, brain development. I was going to add in a little bit just about the hypothalamus as well. And so, just so listeners know, it's in charge of kind of the hormonal system and emotions. And so, the sexual and aggressive centers inside the hypothalamus are very close. And so, if there's damage to the hypothalamus, these can sort of potentially overlap. With some of the, inflammation, et cetera. And they can, this is what they had hypothesized, is that that could lead to some of the overlap between sexual, instincts, urges, and violent tendencies. So that's where they feel like there are a lot of these lust murders, and the damage can be injury, it can be malnutrition. So if you're looking at neglect in a child who's been grossly neglected, the hypothalamus may have not been, may have not developed correctly. So that's one that I wanted to make sure to mention. In addition, the temporal lobe. So if that's damaged, it can lead to like amnesia, epileptic seizures, and we know just from hearing people who have had brain damage and who have, maybe they're veterans or for whatever reasons, a lot of them will admit that they are more aggressive after that happened. So yeah, damage to the temporal lobes can kind of lead to more violent and aggressive reactions. It's almost like their ability to cope has definitely been diminished because of the brain damage. And the research has found that 70% of people who experience like brain injury do develop more violent tendencies in general. So obviously depends on which parts of the brain and things like that, and the age, developmental age, and et cetera. But yeah, there's a little bit of info related to nature. And of course, like you said, Daniel, it's the perfect storm. I mean, all of these things that are occurring, unfortunately, and it just leads to the worst outcome possible. So yeah.
We can't really go around like predicting whether or not someone's going to do this based on just like looking at their hypothalamus or looking at their childhood history, because we have plenty of cases of negative childhood histories or traumatic brain injury, everything under the sun that don't lead to these things, that don't lead to someone going around killing a bunch of people for a variety of reasons. That there's this kind of like, again, and it makes me think too, like thinking back to stories, like listening to other podcasts on serial killers that kind of talk about their history too, that there's also this, like, for some of them, it includes being able to get away with it, being facilitated, having police ignore them. And so there's also this like added bit of like behavioral psychology that gets into it, that the more and more they do it, the more and more it's rewarding, and they're not being stopped and they're not being punished for it, or they're being ignored because they kind of like, oh, that's just so and so, he's always a little angry, but no one thinks about it. Or oh, well, that's weird Ed Gein, he's just doing his thing, we're not going to go check his house out, we don't have to know what's in there.
We like to explain a lot of things away. Certainly
Yeah.
if it's family, right? It's like, I didn't make a kid that would do that. What? There's no way. But some people did. So yeah. And I think part of that notion, like how did they get away with it for so long, especially, certainly some of these serial killers, I think that really ties into people's misconception that all serial killers have a high IQ. And I certainly get, like, you have to have a certain aptitude to be able to get away with this, three or more times or even two or more times. But then there are other things. There's just faulty police work. There's denial. There's who knows what else. But I mean, there chance, luck. I don't want to say like luck in a good way, but yeah, I mean there's some other reasons for it. Yeah, I mean we know that serial killers, and I don't remember if we talked about it before, but that they do just have an average level of intelligence, some even lower levels than the average. So.
Have we seen, like, we have seen the kind of a general drop in crime since, let's say, the 80s. Have we seen a general drop in like reported serial killers since then, or has it been kind of stable? Like maybe we're entering a trade-off between like it was easier to get away with it in like the 40s, the 50s.
Oh.
But nowadays we're talking about it more, so it's easier for us to hear about it. Or is it we have seen like a drop off in that?
But it has gone down. Certainly, I would say the stats are going to be skewed with COVID because nobody was really anywhere for a while. But yeah, just that uptick in the 80s, kind of 90s, and it has tapered off a bit.
It's still like I'm looking at a chart here of serial killer victims and not actual serial killers and it spiked in like the mid 80s
Yes.
but also like through the 70s to 80s it was pretty high and it has tapered off but like it was still fairly it's higher than it was in like the 60s today.
Right. It well, and again, I feel like a lot of that has to do with our technology and reporting and things like that, and how many people are getting caught. A lot of copycats too. This guy who with those who killed allegedly killed the those four college kids in Idaho, apparently was very interested in Dennis Rader and the BTK killer.
I saw
And
that.
yeah, did we talk about this last time? Now I'm feeling
A
like
little
I'm
bit.
being redundant here. But
We
you know
haven't
what I
touched on
mean.
this
So
part.
yeah, but just some copycat. Right? You're like, ooh, I see exactly how this person did it. They get away with it for so long. I mean, I hate to say that we have so many of these like perfect templates of how to do this and get away with it. So
I mean, do we though? Because like they all get caught, and this dude got caught too.
I think they want to though. They want the attention. I mean, he some admit that if they hadn't gotten caught, they would have kept doing it. And I think, honestly, I think it's both. I think that they want to keep doing it, but I think they also really enjoy that attention.
But it's the narcissism
Big
that
time.
we've talked about. Yeah, I was trying to
Big.
find I'd like to see a breakdown. There's a really interesting I can put the website up, but a really interesting breakdown of this is SAS, the stats program blog that breaks down like serial killer victims per year and then victims per 10 million population in the United States. And then it also breaks down like from 1900 to 2014 method in which the victim died and disproportionately it's they were shot. But I'm wondering if that again is like a modern like how does that change over time? Like, are we seeing a disproportionate number of like in terms of like method, much in the same way as we're seeing this spike in let's say school shootings or mass shootings, that are we seeing this now change of serial killers using guns more as opposed because we're talking about like 3,500 shot compared to 1,900, 2,000 strangled or 12, 1,300 stabbed or other, being like 300, 400. So yeah, and it's fascinating because they break it down by like and this is mostly on victims. They don't been trying to find stuff on the actual serial killers themselves. But it's interesting that
And I have seen similar data, and I find it surprising because of the serial killers that, at least the ones that I teach about, that I discuss, very few, I would say less than 10%, use firearms because that doesn't do it for them. They want to be up close. They want to have their hands on that person while that person expires. A lot of times they need that for the sexual thrill. So, and maybe it's just the fact that when you use a firearm, you're gonna kill somebody, and some of these other methods, they may be less likely, maybe less likely for that to actually
and I
happen.
guess also if we're defining a serial killer as someone who just as someone who kills more than three people or more than 3 times. Like, people who utilize firearms are going to be much more likely to be defined as a serial killer. I did find this article from Discover Magazine that kind of gets into it. It's they're talking about the data of serial killers have rapidly declined since the 1980s. But much in the same way that, like, all crime has rapidly declined since the 1980s. That's kind of where it's at.
Well, and the reality too is that so many, I think that a lot of it is, like I keep saying, underreported because A, we have fewer people on the planet, say 100 years ago. B, you could get away with it. C, if you were to have several wives and kill all of them, that's your property. And so are your children. That's your property. And so you're probably not going to get in trouble for that. And then women as well, we know tend to use poison. And there were so many times when they didn't get caught because nobody thought a woman would do that. And there were so many other explanations, though it's consumption, it's heart failure, it's who knows what else. A lot of other ways to explain it.
There's also this article by The Atlantic thinking about the social aspects and, like, why the US might be a bigger hotbed for serial killers. In the US, we now have one of the lowest rates in the Western world for homicide clearance. That in 1965, our rate was 91%, which I think is, like, they find the killer. Someone's murdered, they find the killer 91% of the time. It's now 61.6%, and that was in 2017. And so
Oh,
part of it, they
surprising.
argue in this article, is just the size of the United States. It's easy to jump state lines. It's
Yes.
easy to travel and to kind of keep doing it. So it's harder to kind of get pinned down in an area. Yeah, it's called modern life has made it easier for serial killers to thrive.
Yeah, well, and Ted Bundy did that. And we didn't have interstates until like the 80s, I don't know if it's mid or late 80s, but so yeah, now you can easily just zip on over to a different state or different jurisdiction, and then they're not looking for you. Yeah, oh, that's yeah,
Yeah, they're
that's
talking
crazy.
about the guy who's not a household serial killer name, but his confessed death total across 14 states in 4 decades triples Bundy's. He's linked to at least 60 homicides and claims to have committed 33 more. And he did so, like, along the highway.
Who was it?
Samuel Little.
Yeah. So he's become more well known recently, in part. So he, I believe he had a lower IQ, yet had almost this visual, what's the word I'm looking for, visual memory. And so if you go and look online, you'll see he drew all these pictures of his victims. And he had so many, and apparently his drawings were very, very accurate. And he got caught because he chose African American women. So when he basically switched to white women, that's when he got caught. Yep. And he admitted, he's like, I shouldn't have switched because that's what led to my demise. It's like, oh, because he knew, people will be looking for, and there'll be more media attention, horribly so, for white women versus black women. It's disturbing, but he knew that.
To
Yep.
bring us back to our nature nurture aspect, he was a boxer. So some possible head trauma.
Lots of head trauma. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
See, I
this is
didn't know that. That's super
Arndt
helpful.
Field talks about, like, different top serial killer professions. This is part of the article after mentioning he was a boxer and an ambulance attendant.
Interesting.
But those aren't, like, top serial killer professions: police and military personnel, forestry workers,
Hey.
hotel
The
porters, and warehouse managers, among others.
police, yeah, law enforcement. So even with this the Idaho alleged killer, he even applied for like the police department. I don't remember exactly, doing what, but or like security surveillance. And forestry makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, it says here that like it's not the job itself, but how
No, the
often the
power.
job allows you. Because like the quote here is, the gas station attendant has no opportunity, but the long haul trucker has plenty.
And
Makes
in law
sense.
enforcement, you're allowed to carry a gun around. You are in a position of power and you can do things, and you're more likely to get away with it.
A lot of time where you're driving on the road and maybe out down, especially like rural police work. A lot of time out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that's so frightening. I mean, you literally have handcuffs. You have all these things at your disposal to use.
Well, let me just say that I reject your nature versus nurture dichotomy for this episode, and that the determinants of serial killing is obviously in zodiac signs, and it's just written in the stars.
There you go.
Have y'all seen the article of the most common zodiac signs for the serial killers?
No. But I think that would be a good end to this episode.
Yeah, tell
Because,
us.
and a good bridge into our discussion next week on pseudoscience.
So the top ones are Gemini,
Of course.
Virgo, Pisces, and Sagittarius.
Aren't they all like summer month? No,
Sagittarius
Sagittarius
is winter.
is December.
That's yours, Daniel, isn't
That is mine.
it? Mine's Virgo and it's August. It's September, August.
I'm
Pisces is
surprised.
March, February, and then Gemini is June.
Huh. I'm on the cusp of Aries and Taurus, and man, the Aries part can be really fiery. I'm surprised there are not more Aries.
I'm surprised there aren't any fire signs at all. Oh no, Sagittarius
Yeah.
is a fire sign. Never
Oh, yeah.
mind. They're all represented.
Mm-hmm.
So
Mm yeah.
the worst of each of the elements.
Yeah. So it says Ted Bundy was Sagittarius, Jeffrey Dahmer was Gemini, Ed Gein was Virgo, John Wayne Gacy was Pisces. Who else is on here? I don't know the other names. I'll send this to you, Sarah.
Fascinating.
Wonder if
Definitely
that
not
also
Taurus.
relates to other things. Like, because of course it does. Could be
Yes, indeed.
the new name. Nature, nurture, or star sign. What
Or
causes
star
a serial
sign.
killer?
Right? The triad. There's the new triad. Nature and nurture and
Zodiac.
the Zodiac.
Oh, one thing before we close this episode, I wanted to give this kind of relates to your CIA comment earlier, Daniel, but one of our previous guests, Peter Williams, sent us a
Oh, yeah.
fantastic interactive map of the APA and the federal government and the war on terror interactions with like torture projects and stuff. And so we will also link that in the description of this episode too.
Yeah, speaking of dark triad, the APA and the DOD and
And the war on terror.
the war on terror. Yeah. We're gonna have to
But there's
delve into
also,
that report at some point, Thomas.
yeah, no, it's crazy. Like it talks about like when Zimbardo became APA president and put the call out for like psychologists to start working with the DOD.
Wait, so you're telling me it was Zimbardo that started all of this?
He's at the very top of this. Let's
It
see.
all comes back to Zimbardo.
Yep.
Just like he wants it to.
Philip
Yep.
Zimbardo becomes APA president January 1st, 2002.
Arch nemesis of
Oh
the
my God.
podcast.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well,
And then
yeah,
in
okay,
June
we gotta squeeze.
1st, Yeah, June 1st, he put out the call for encouraging federal agencies to recruit behavioral scientists.
Well, my understanding of the CIA torture report and the psychologist involved just got spicier. oh boy.
I see.
Well.
Yeah. Well, I want to say thank you all for having me. It's
for
been
joining us.
It's been fun. And it has been, yeah, it's fun to sort of talk with other people about all of this, and to get other, you know, professional thoughts and ideas and facts and, you know, commentary and all of that. So thank you all for having me. It's been a good ride.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Definitely. Yes.
So another season, I'd say semester, but we're a little late. Another season down.
Huzzah.
And on that, we'll say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yes. Goodbye.